Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Well, aloha, everybody. Welcome to the Parts Unknown, the last interview with Professor Gary Lee. And tonight we're having a very special guest. We're kind of getting him on the line right now. But before we do, a big shout out to my producer, Mr. Jesse Bowen. He's got something to share with what he's talking about. He's joined this year for 2020. Hansi Bowen?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Good. Well, yeah, we have a lot of great stuff going on, as always. You know, I'm starting to write for the World Martial Arts Magazine, and, you know, it's really my column is about mindset, mind mastery. So I'm right now looking at some things to do just for myself, but I'm going to share it with the world just about, you know, being positive, about staying focused, about goals, understand that your life matters, that there's a purpose for your life, and you can be a contributor to making the world a better place. You know, if not the entire world, your space, your place, you know, the environment that you are actually in, and make a positive impact on lives. And this is what our book is about. The Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers book is about impacting other lives through the stories that we tell about how the martial arts has empowered our lives, how it's making a change in our life. And I was just telling someone today, actually a real estate guy, he stopped by my home, rang the doorbell. I came down the stairs and you know, he came back and we just started chatting. And, you know, I'm telling him about all the things I'm doing from the martial arts and, you know, how it's impacted my life and, you know, and all those things. He says, you know, I can really see it. I look at you, you know, at your home. You know, this stuff must be really working. I said, yeah, along with God, you know, it really does, you know, work. Martial arts is very powerful. And we want to be able to share our story, you know, with the world, you know, if nothing else, help people to have a vision. So this is what we're doing with the book. This year we're going to be in Las Vegas, and it's going to be great. We're going to be honoring Grandmaster Chuck Norris, Benny the Jet. You know, it's going to be a really great weekend. And right now we're actually going to be launching another event that's going to be up in Washington, D.C., and that's going to be with Grandmaster Dennis Brown, Super Brown. We're going to be having an event at his event this year also. So there'll be more information coming out on that. But, you know, this year's a positive year. It's 2020. And I don't know if anyone else is excited about it, but I'm very excited about 2020. This is a year of vision, but it's also the year of action. So everyone get motivated. Remember, go to our website, who'swhointhemartialarts.com. Nominate someone to be inducted into the book. Nominate someone, you know, coming to the banquet. This year we're going to have a martial arts tournament going on. So there's going to be a lot of really positive and great things happening. Back to you, sir.
Well, a lot of exciting things I hear from the event last year. There was lots of new historians put in, and a lot of the old guys showed up too. But you're having a different event at a different hotel this year. Tell me a little bit about that. And by the way, I just sent you Chris's number to call him.
Hold on a second, sir.
Apologize, my listeners. We're waiting to get Mr. Chris Colombo on the line, my special guest tonight, and just taking care of it. That's the pleasures of live radio. And the neat thing about it is we have some of the best guests that we find throughout America to interview. And tonight's guest, we get him on the line, is Chris Colombo, stuntman from Hollywood. He actually lives in New Jersey, but I've known him since the early 90s when we met at the first Supergrams in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And we'll be talking about that. We're going to get him on the line here tonight.
Well, great, sir. Like I said, I think he's actually on the call with us.
Oh,
Chris,
are you
there?
Chris. He said he was listening. He heard music. He couldn't hear us yet.
Okay, well, I'm going to have him to hang up and call us right back. So, sir, pick back over, and I'm going to see if I get him situated, get him back on the air.
Okay, thank you so much. While we're waiting for our special guest, let me tell you what's happening in Houston this year. On September the 25th and 26th, we'll be having the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame and also hosting the Al Garza Celebrity Roast. Now, the Hall of Fame is really exciting. They haven't done one since 7 years ago, so it's about time. And also, we're putting in Dennis Cox. We're honoring James Stevens, Daryl Stewart, Pat Hardy. Wow. And we're honoring one of the greatest fighters we lost this past month ago, Mr. Glenn McMorris. And, you know, the Texas Hall of Fame is really, really special because it honors the legendary Texas fighters and the people that kind of created sport karate, not only in America, but definitely with the roots of Texas. And then we're moving to Greenville, South Carolina in November 6th and 7th to honor Mr. Sam Chapman. And that'll be both at the Hilton. One will be the Hilton Galleria, and you can call 713-483-0476 for detailed information. Or if you want tickets from Greenville, South Carolina for Sam Chapman's roast, call the same number, 713-483-0476. You know, I'm really excited about the fact that we've been on the air for 5 years now. And for 5 years, we brought some of the best interviews and up-close personal questions been asked and answered. And, you know, tonight I have a very special guest. We're kind of working in right now. Chris, are you on the line yet?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
There we go. Okay, I'm not going to blame you being a Yankee or anything for not being on the air on time, but that's okay. I love you anyway. You know that, right? Well, listen, Hansi Bowen, thank you so much. You're the best producer a Hawaiian could have. Thank you so much, Jesse Bowen. God bless you, buddy. Well, tonight,
is
someone I met in 1993 at the first absolute super grand in Atlantic City, New Jersey. We didn't know each other, but he'd been like a karate legend up in his area. And I was trying to make a name for myself in Texas. I'm talking about the one and only who now is a full-time stuntman. His name is Mr. Chris Colombo. We got a bunch of shows like, Chris, are you there, sir?
Hey. Oh, that's good. How you doing there, Gary?
Well, I'm doing good, Chris. How you doing? I've been really excited about the show tonight because we get to talk about some really cool people and, you know, about your history. So right off the bat, kind of tell my friends and listeners, you know, who you started with, you know, Progressive V, and how you got involved with sport karate. And what year did you make black belt?
Well, I tell you, it's funny. I got started in the mid-70s with Tommy May. And
Tommy.
Tommy May. Yeah, that's my first instructor. And I started a traditional Japanese Okinawan system called Ishinru Karate. And that was when I started getting the bug for competing in tournaments and stuff like, and
what
weapons
year was that,
and fighting.
What year was that?
1977, 78. I was just getting out of high school, and that was the time, you know. I always wanted to study martial arts, so, you know, I didn't have any money to do it, but I got a job, and that's how I got started, you know.
I was in Manhattan in 1977 with Tadashi Nakamura and William Oliver and those guys.
William Oliver is a legend.
Well, legendary. He kicked me around the room a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And I started training with Tommy and worked out for many years. And at the same time, this one day, this guy comes in the dojo, and he's about my size. His name was Dougie Rose. And Dougie and I were training in Nishinru together. And so we got along. We kind of hit it off. And then another instructor came in, a guest who had trained with Moses Powell. And he said to Dougie, "You used to train with us. Hey, let's do a demo." So now this guy, and I'm a little guy. He was shorter than I was. And he went out there and started doing jiu-jitsu and going crazy and doing his thing. And it just blew me away when I was watching the way he was doing the techniques and then doing rollouts and all the stuff. So I said, I want to learn that. So I started training a little bit with Bob Ute initially. Then after Bob Ute, I moved on and started training with Little John Davis.
When did you get in the competition bug? When did you start competing?
Oh, I was competing all along. I never stopped. I think my first major tournament was the U.S. Open. So that was my first major tournament. I went down and I took in Florida, in St. Petersburg, and I took third place in
McCoy, they run that. Mike Sawyer and Mike McCoy, good friends of mine.
Yeah, I took third place in sparring in my first tournament. And that was, quite an experience. I got banged up and bruised. That was before people were using sparring gear. You didn't see people right. Where most people didn't have sparring gear. They just taped up their hands a little bit and, wore those white shin and instep pads and just went out there and did their thing.
When it was introduced in 1973-74, it still was going through an adjustment in 77-78. And, even Texas didn't accept headgear until 1984. They didn't accept headgear until 1984. So equipment's always been a controversial subject, especially back in the early days.
So there's a lot of different, a lot of different attitudes about it, but it was all good. So from there, I started dabbling a little bit of Aikijitsu at the same time. I just love training, and did some of that for a while, and then I got the bug when I started really, really working with Little John Davis and Professor V. And Little John, I loved what he did. He's still doing it. He does Kumite Ryu Jiu-Jitsu. And he was a notable Shotokan fighter. So his Jiu-Jitsu techniques were, he was the senior student underneath Moses Powell. So Moses Powell was his senior student, was Little John Davis.
He did a one-thumb finger roll. He was known for doing that. I remember that. Moses Powell.
Yeah. And he did it. He had his own little thing. Little John took what Moses did, but he kind of put a very, hard twist to it. And he just put a little bit more
of a hard
style. Did
Earl Bennett? Were they together? Earl Bennett and Moses John Davis, they trained together?
I don't think so. No. I don't know that who Little John actually trained in Shotokan with, but Errol Bennett was in the Bronx and Little John was in Brooklyn.
Murazaki was there. Remember Murazaki? He was out of New York. Yeah.
Murazaki.
I bet you he came with him. Yeah.
I think he was out in the island, if I'm not mistaken. But, there's a lot of great Shotokan people out on the East Coast. But Little John had a great reputation with fighting. If you remember, you go back.
I do remember.
The ABC's Wide World of Sports had karate versus kung
the
fu.
The thrill of agony.
You have Little John versus Tayari Cassell on live TV. It's the first time they ever showed sparring and live martial arts on national television. Now, this is the age before computers, before the internet, before cable TV. So to be on live TV,
I remember it now, but I'm going to say it right. The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That's how they open up ABC Wide World of Sports.
The guy falling, when he's coming down the ski jump and he trashes, But that was
the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Exactly. Well, that was ESPN. That was before ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
That was wow, you're an old man. You're an old
yeah.
guy. How old are you now?
Well, I'm 60
How old are
now.
You now?
60.
Okay.
Yeah,
now, I'm
going to
ask you a hard question. I'm going to ask you a hard question. Now, you've seen competition throughout the years and all the people who still compete and what it is now. What's the major difference between, say, back in 1993 when you met me to what it is now? What's the biggest change you've seen?
Oh, I think work ethic is different. It's for some reason I see a lot of people are coming into the martial arts looking for that instant gratification and they're not really willing to do the work. The ones that succeed are the ones that are going to do the hard work. And those are the
right,
ones that are going to get ahead.
You.
So I see that as being
well,
a huge
you were an
overall
competitor. You were like my friend who we lost a couple of weeks ago, Kevin Thompson. You wanted weapons, fighting, and kata. Now, what made you have that was that where you want to do all three divisions and do well? You didn't just you won your three divisions. You were really good.
It's funny that you bring up Kevin Thompson because Kevin Thompson
he was my friend. I miss him.
Was my role model. I modeled if you ever really watch the way I do my introductions on video, if you ever watch any of the old footage, I have to confess I copied a lot of Kevin's stuff because his mannerisms, the way he carried himself, the way he did his presentation, the way he stepped back, the way he bowed, and the formality and the structure and the way he did what he did was different.
Well,
and
I want to plug him a little bit. I want to plug him a little because you realize that Kevin Thompson, Steve Fisher, and those guys were responsible for the word grand champion. Because here's what happened to the promoters. You see these guys that would run kata, fighting, and weapons, and these guys, Kevin Thompson and Steve Fisher and a couple other people, Pedro Xavier, these guys were responsible for the word grand champion. Now you won a few grand championships yourself, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sure. Now,
I remember George Chung said to me, do you realize that there used to be, Jun Ri used to have a big event at Madison Square Garden. And in 1989 was the first year that anyone had won the Forms Grand Champion that was not a Taekwondo stylist.
Wow, that's
and it just so happened to
did
be that
win
was
it?
Me.
Did
so
you win
the
it?
First...
Did you guys win it?
I won it, yeah. And it was George Chung was one of the referees, and he came up to me. He goes, and he just he congratulated me, and he was very very supportive, and he was just impressed with the fact that that happened. It was
that George and John Chung. They weren't brothers. John was from Junior East and George was from the East Coast and Ernie Reyes. But those guys were some of the best form competitors we've ever had. I open my show up every night, every Tuesday, with John Chung introducing me. So I really learned to love those guys and they're my friends. And George, I hate him. I took a third place to him a couple times, But it's okay, Chris. I probably
well,
got more third place than anybody in the universe, I took a lot of third places back in the day.
It's okay. Third place is good. It's just, for a second it's a little better.
Well, back
and
then,
really
when we competed, Chris, when we competed, it used to be 20, 30 people in a division, not two and three like it is today. So they separated ages, and I'm a peckerhead about that. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that a 32-year-old can't compete against an 18-year-old or, the age difference. I'm not into that at all. That's
are
one
they
of the
doing
reasons
that
I do
now? Are they doing that now? And they're telling you you can't compete in the lower division if you're older?
Well, I'm sure you can, but, it's like when they separated fighting and made super lightweight, heavyweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, super heavyweight. You don't really know who the best fighter is, Because you always
sparring
business. I've been,
yeah. Sparring.
Well,
sparring. I mean,
I know, but still, age should not be a factor in karate, though. That's just my opinion.
Yeah,
you know, I'm an old guy that thinks old ways. I'm sorry. Now let's talk about what we first met. It was 1993.
We had a good time in Atlantic City. That was fun.
It was the first Super Grand that Boy Seidel, he broke away from NASCAR. He formed the NBL. I think the first one was in San Diego or Niagara Falls. I forget.
The first one was in Niagara Falls, and that was in 1990.
The second one was in San Diego, right?
And then it went to the West Coast for the second one. Then I think it went back to the East Coast for the Atlantic City. So that was the third one that you and I met.
Okay, 1993. I remember who won Grand Champion.
It was
1992.
It was the 92.
EJ Volta. EJ Volta.
He won the Grand, right?
Right. You remember EJ?
Yeah, I do. I do remember him. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, EJ. There was a lot of good people back then. It was.
Yeah.
There was some real quality people out there doing stuff. And
well,
what was fun was there was a lot of.
How many titles you walk out that day with in Atlantic City? How many? Because you beat.
I believe it was three.
You beat me. I know. I took the third place to you that day, or second. I forget. But you had a great day that day, Weapons.
Yeah, I had a good day.
Yeah.
But
it was
quite an experience. And it was a lot of fun to be out there and doing it. You know what it is? Back then, it seemed like the camaraderie and the support. There was so much activity. Competition was great, you know, getting out there, getting it all out and doing it for real. But do you remember how it was? You'd show up and you'd go into like a banquet room and there would be 20 people in there playing around, tricking, doing new moves, showing somebody how to do something else, different styles, different teams, just interacting, you know, socializing, having a good time.
Right.
And then the next day they'd be competing against each other, trying to not, you know, knock each other down. And it was a lot of fun. That was, I loved the NBL
I got, to show my listeners. One of the things I did in Atlantic City, because it was the first time that Texas, Mr. Minshew and the Texas guys came up to the East Coast together. And I remember going out that morning. It was so cold, but I was fully dressed in full hakama and karate outfit and go out into the ocean doing kata early in the morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning. And everybody looking out on the balcony thought I was crazy. But, you know, I guess I was a little crazy. You know, but it was cold. It was cold in Atlantic City on the boardwalk that year. Really cold. Now, you live in New Jersey. What part of New Jersey do you live in?
No, I live in New York. I live in New York.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't live in
New York.
Yeah, no. I'm in New York. I'm still in New York, and I always lived in New York. And my school.
I'm sorry, you're from Jersey. I'm sorry.
No, New York.
Okay.
It's been good. You know, I live up in Westchester County. I had a school in New Rochelle for 30 years, now I have a studio up in Rye Brook, New York. So I still teach, I still train, I have a lot of fun with that. And that's like my sanity. And then I go and I do my stunt work on the side. But
I want to talk about that in a few minutes. So right now, so talking about you and sport karate, because, you know, people that are listening to my show or listen to the podcast, I want them to understand you've been around a long, long time. And you and I, we're not just throwing names around. We knew these guys and we competed against them. And, you know, some of the best competitors that you faced besides like K.A. or Pedro or other people, maybe some other fighters that you faced or kind of people that you admire. Remember you?
Well, you know, what was it? I'll tell you who hit me the hardest. I'll tell you that. Was it Butcher from Chicago?
Butch Tagasawa.
Not Butch Tagasawa. They used to call him Butcher. And I don't remember what his nickname. I can't remember what he was. And he nailed it. It was at the AKA Grand Nationals in Chicago. It was an NBL event. Yes, John Sharkey. And he hit me with a sidekick so hard that I thought his foot came out my back. It was it was good. But I had a ball. I had a lot of fun. And you know, you remember those times, and he hit you hard. Jonas,
Butcher, I want to know who that is, because I got to find out who that was.
But he was pretty well known, and I just don't remember what his name was. I just remember that they called him the Butcher.
Alan, tell some people up in your area. How about Chris is from California, but Chris Costamazzo was my rivalry. Yeah, how about Rocky DiRico and Michael Burton, those guys?
Well, Michael Burton was a rivalry for me in self-defense. We never fought.
Yeah.
But in self-defense and forms, Michael Burton and I were head-to-head for forever. You know, there was a lot of guys like that. You had
It's funny, listen. In Guatemala, I pulled him to the side. I said, I need you tonight really bad. I'm performing in front of all the Guatemalans. It was Eric Schumer's tournament. He said, I'll do anything with you, Gary. You know, he's a hairdresser, but he's my friend. He's a good karate guy. And so that night, I grabbed him by the nose and put him down on the floor and cut cucumbers on his stomach, him and Mike Gilmore. He thought it was crazy. But I like Mike a lot. He's do some great self-defense. Now, remember Jody Sasaki?
Sure. Jody Sasaki, he was a Kempo stylist, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was a good self-defense guy, like you guys.
Yeah. He did a good – he was another arch rival. Jody Sasaki, yeah, he was good.
Yeah.
He put together a nice little show when he went up there and did his thing. Michael Burton.
When you did your self-defense, did you do jiu-jitsu with Shotokan and a mixture of both styles? You did a little bit of everything?
I did more jiu-jitsu than I did anything else when I did that. Remember, think back now. Back then, BJJ was non-existent. You didn't talk about it. Nobody, if you would have said BJJ, people wouldn't have known what it was. I'm going to give an example on that line. When I opened up my studio, I named my studio Westchester Jiu-Jitsu Studios. People used to come by and they'd walk in the school and asked to buy a trophy because they didn't know what jiu-jitsu was. They just saw all the trophies in the front windows and said, this must be a trophy store. And they thought I was selling them. And I changed the name at one point to East West Karate Jiu-Jitsu Studios because people wouldn't walk in with just Westchester Jiu-Jitsu. They didn't know what it was. So jiu-jitsu was pretty, nobody really knew what it was back then. But what I was doing was more traditional jiu-jitsu based on what Moses and Professor V and Little John Davis were teaching. And what I liked about it was the practicality, and the fact that the stuff that Little John was doing was very street-oriented. And Professor V's stuff had just a different flow to it that I admired, that it was a little more spiritual the way he approached teaching, whereas Little John was a little more aggressive, a little more hardcore. So I kind of liked that blend, and that helped with self-defense because I would pull from the techniques. And,
you and I have something very much in common. I did stunt work for Six Flags for 35 years. And now you're a professional stuntman. How do you involve a stunt work?
Well, I think martial arts got me my first job. I did a movie, and then I did a little bit of martial arts stuff in the movie. And then I ended up getting another job, and I got joined the union.
Let's throw in some names. Let's throw in people like Matt Mullins and Ron Searles. And Hero Kota,
Ron Searles is an established stuntman.
Yeah, all the stuntmen in Hollywood are doing really good now. Now, do you go back and forth to Hollywood, or do you do all your stuff in New York?
Well, I did in the beginning. I used to go out to L.A., and I did The Rock out there, a movie called The Rock with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage. I did
Right.
I was I was a stunt double on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which filmed out there in L.A. So I used to go out there and work in the last season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And once 9/11 came around, I stopped going out to the West Coast to work because I wanted to stay closer to home just in case something happened for my family. So
Tommy that we talked about the other night, and I loved him so much because he gave me my first shot at a movie. I wasn't an actor, but I got to take coffee to everybody on the set. And it was Hal Needham, and the Cannonball Run was a movie that I was worked on. And those guys were amazing. I mean, you know, he put together a cast of incredible people like Burt Reynolds, Elliot Gould, I mean, Dolly Brothers, Mel Tillis, Sarah Fawcett. I mean, there were a lot of incredible people. And now, I was lucky enough to carry coffee to these guys, but Hal Needham, as you know, was a great stuntman. I believe he was John Wayne's stunt double back in the old days during the Westerns. Now, some of those producers, when they work with you, how do you feel that you got to get, what do you got to feel out of them? What do you, I mean, you have good producers and bad producers, but have you dealt with both?
Well, you have to be a people person when you're doing what I'm doing. You have to, you know, get along with people. You don't want to make things worse. You got to work. You got to get the job done, and you want to do it as fast and efficiently and safely as possible.
What's the most dangerous stunt you ever did? What's the most dangerous gag you ever did, Chris?
Well, that's a common question. And I guess that's all in perspective for what might be dangerous for one person or another.
Yeah, me. I got a couple of favorite ones, but I believe every time I did a gag or I did something, even I rehearsed it 10 times, I still was nervous and something could go wrong. I always thought like that. So,
that can happen, but you want to have faith in your equipment.
Six Flags had me do? They had me jump out of a helicopter. It was 200 feet. I had to land a big rubber mat. It was crazy. I've only practiced 3 times before I did it, but I don't know. I was scared to death during the practice the gig.
Yeah, that would be an airbag that you fell into, I'm sure, because because when you're that high, that airbag looks like a matchbook. So.
I'll tell you the story. In the last show I did for Six Flags called the Police Academy Stunt Show, I had to do like a 30-foot high fall. And the guy that said he was going to do it, you know, he was ragging me and just basically said I couldn't do it. And I was like a kid. When you tell a kid he can't do it, he does it anyway. And I really, I was scared to death, I'll be honest with you. But I pulled it off and it's history. So, but answer that question. I mean, every time I did a gag, whether it was, whatever, I was scared to death, I mean, because I always thought something might go wrong or the other person, wasn't prepared enough, I guess that made me a good producer in the end.
My favorite job, it's probably not what would excite a lot of people. I mean, I've been set on fire. I've been hit by cars. I've been, crashed, fall, fight, get blown up. I've done a lot of things, gone through windshields of cars, flying out. I've ratcheted, rappelled off Silver Cup Studios, climbed the Silver Cup sign in New York City. I've done a lot of fun stuff.
Cool.
But what's exciting, what was the most exciting thing for me recently, they just did this new series. I didn't watch the show yet, so I don't know if it's a good or bad show or in that sense. But it was the most fun stunt. They wanted to do a practical scene in Times Square. So we actually hung a stuntman upside down by his ankle, by one leg, and naturally the safety line was going up to a harness. It wasn't really just one leg, but we were 650 feet in the air and working in the middle of Times Square on the tallest building there in the H&M, above the H&M sign. So it was really a lot of fun, and probably for most people that would be pretty dangerous. But it was it was just a great time. I mean, the view is incredible. I was with great people. The stuntmen I was working with, you know, some of the best riggers in New York were there. It was four of us on the very top doing the work. Great key coordinator, Stephen Mann. It was really exciting, and I wasn't in the limelight. We were doing all the backstage work, making sure that everything's done right. But we had the right people, we had a system in place, and we had a ball. And
now,
so it's been
good. You
know
what's so exciting about having you, Chris, is the fact that you're still doing it at 60 years old. God bless you, man. And you know, you took all your knowledge that you accumulated through Professor B and other people, Tommy and everybody, and you applied it to a job that you helped feed your family and, you know, help you stay in the light as far as martial arts goes. Now, you know, the neat thing about Chris I want to talk to you about, if people want to get in touch with you in New York, how are they getting in touch with you?
Well, they can give this, you can give the studio a call anytime. And I'll give you that
number.
That number is 914-633-8078. And 914-633-8078. That's the best number. And give a call, say hello, you know, go to lunch.
Do you have a website?
You know, come and train.
Did you go to?
Come and train. You can go to westchesterjujitsu.com. And I spell jujitsu, J-U-J-I-T-S-U, Westchester, just like it sounds, westchesterjujitsu.com. So those are the, you know, best ways to get a hold of me and, you know, to train and do our thing.
Well, do you still do competitions still, or are you retired?
I don't compete, but every time I go to a tournament, I get the bug.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. Yeah.
You know,
now, do you have someone that's walking your steps? I mean, first of all, are you married?
Oh, I have two beautiful daughters. My wife still puts up with me. We're married 30 years. And
okay.
It's pretty good. I have two beautiful daughters. One of my daughters actually lives in Texas. And another one of my I was at Round Rock, and then my other daughter.
Were they in martial arts and other fields?
Yes. Yeah, my youngest daughter is 16. She still trains. She's a black belt. She tried to say to me, "Dad, why did it take so long for me to get my black belt?" I mean, she started training with me when she was three. I didn't give her a black belt until she was about 14 or 15.
Right.
So, you know, you made her. I said, there's no rush. You want to get what you want to learn, what you got to learn.
I told you to go to YouTube and type in Garrett Lee, G-A-R-E-T-T, Lee, and you see all his stuff. He's the apple that fell off the tree a few years back, and
mm-hmm.
I'm real proud of him. He's been real good now. So it's good to have children that walk in the steps. Even if it's a little bit of what we did, because as you said earlier in the show, we got to experience a great time with a lot of people that really changed our lives. And
hey, can
you know,
I bring up some
take
names
my little
for you?
Break, well, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my little break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to play the Legends name game. That's why I'm going to shoot their names at you, and then you can tell me about them. I kind of like a fight. You're talking about for 2 minutes. Then go to the next name, okay?
Okay. Are you throwing all the names?
Okay, I'll bring you back on the line. Don't go nowhere. Stay on the line, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll be right back. Okay, everybody, I'm with the one and only Chris Colombo from New York. My mistake, I thought he was from New Jersey, but he's from New York. I want him to hit me next time he sees me. But, you know, he's a stuntman and one of the great competitors that we created here in America. Well, we got to plug a couple people. First person I want to plug is, of course, my friend Mike Diller in Century Martial Arts and Leo Rogers, who really, really care about the Sport Karate Museum. And by the way, if you haven't been with us for the past 5 years, we're sponsored not only by the AMAA, Masters of Radio blog, Jesse Bowen, but we're talking about the Sport Karate Museum, and it's 21 years old this year. We've been doing the Living Legends Roast now for 21 years, and this year in Houston, Texas, we'll be doing two things. Having the Texas Black Belt Hall of Fame induction, and also be honoring Mr. Al Garza. It's going to be September the 25th and 26th. It'll be in the usual Hilton Galleria in Houston, Texas. And also we'll be doing Kata Wars. Now, Kata Wars is an idea that Mr. Roy Kirby, Chief Roy Kirby, I'm sorry, and myself came up with. And it's Kata tournament, but it's much different. You have to have 100 first places as a black belt to be invited. And it's invitational only. And you also have to be invited by a certain group of people that have been past kata fanatics like myself. I mean, amazing group of people. We put it up on our page. But Kata Wars was a lot of fun. We put the kata people under a microscope. Each judge has the specific things they must look for, like upper body or lower body or Kihon fundamentals and karate do. We need a judge if you step out of the ring. Time limit, everything. So, kata practitioners, no matter how good you are, you put it underneath a microscope. Now, we've done it for 5 years. It's been very successful, and this year will be bigger and better than ever. Last year, the number one USKA competitor, Scott Stook, won it. But every year for the past years we've invented it, I've got to plug my student. He should be on the air with me pretty soon. Mr. Dean Pyle. He's been runner-up every year since we created it. I mean, it's a really hard thing to judge. You got to, you know, be specific. And it's not just about who's the best. It literally is about the one who has the best attitude that particular day, because that's what competition is anyway. You have to be the best on your best toes that particular day, because there's anybody who can come in and beat you, or somebody plans to beat you. And competition is a lot of fun, even though it's changed through the years. But in Kata Wars, we add the flavor of not only traditionalism, but also the attitude of that you got to just go out there and be your best for that day, which is going to be the 26th of September this year. We're also going to Greenville, South Carolina, and honoring Mr. Sam Chapman, and honoring the whole East Coast of fighters that will be coming in for the summit and for the venture banquet. Now, I've got a summit with speakers speaking, like Colonel Phil Torres, Joe Corley, Art Heller, Vicky Morrow, Martin McDonald, and go on, Lawrence Arthur. All kinds of cool people will be coming in to make you a better martial artist or a smarter martial artist. That's what the Living Legends does every year, bringing people together. So that's our reputation. Not to be the biggest or the best, but simply bringing people together. And I want to put a big shout out to my friend who just had an event in Atlantic City, Mr. Alan Goldberg, who has the largest martial arts event in the world. I'm not talking about the country, but the world. I don't think anybody surpasses him. He works really hard all year round, and he's on our show every year to introduce what he's doing in Atlantic City every year. So that's my plug, and God bless everybody. You know, that's listening to our show and listening to me ramble about marketing, my Living Legends, and, of course, the Sport Karate Museum. One more thing. If you want to find out what we're about, you can go to www.sportkaratemuseumarchives.com. And archives is spelled A-R-C-H-I-V-E-S. And for physical or view that you can actually watch, you go to YouTube and type in Sport Karate Museum or Professor Gary Lee, and all our stuff will come up. Thank you again for listening to our show for 5 years, and I appreciate everybody who does. Now I'd like to bring back my special guest, Mr. Chris Colombo. Chris, are you there?
Yeah. Hello,
okay.
Mr. Lee.
I can talk still, buddy. I still can talk.
That's good.
Hey, Dean, are you on the line yet? Dean Piles? He's working on a movie called The Coward. Have you heard about that, Chris?
I'm on. Can you hear me?
Oh, Dean, are you there? Good.
Yeah, I'm here.
Very cool. His name is
Trumbo. I've actually been in a meetings with some big guys today. That's what I was doing just a minute ago, and we just got done finishing up some about 2.5 hours of fight choreography. So, yeah, that's what we were doing.
Okay, let me introduce you officially to my guest. Chris Colombo and I go back to the early 90s, and, you know, he's a great competitor. He came under Professor D and Tommy May, and Chris D. Powell trained with Joe Lewis, and then I adopted him, and he's the number one competitor in his age group in NASCAR right now. And, you know, even though it's all kata, weapons, traditional, and musical, he's a hell of a fighter, Chris. You know, he's an all-around competitor. So, Chris Colombo, meet Dean Piles. Dean Piles, meet Chris Colombo.
My pleasure,
my
sir.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, Dean, Chris has
Joe
a lot in common with you because he's a stuntman out of New York, and he started a long time ago. And tell him a little about the movie, The Coward, that you're doing. Not a lot, but just kind of teasing a little bit what you're doing. Dean?
Were you saying something? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I didn't hear you. What
tell
did you say, sir?
Tell my friend Chris Colombo a little about what you're doing. Not a lot, but just kind of teasing.
Right. Okay. We'll tease him. We're doing a movie on it's for anti-bullying. The basis of the movie is we're going to shed a light on not only the effect that bullying has on the person being bullied, but their family, friends, and then all those around them. It's going to be different than like these most martial arts movies and things with where a young kid gets bullied and he finds a janitor of a high school that happens to be a kung fu master and ex-grand champion or whatever. This guy actually had the tools to take care of it himself from the very start because he's a lifelong martial artist and an ex-Marine recon. So he's just choosing to turn the other cheek and be a bigger guy because he made a promise to his dad to do so until the end of the movie where he realizes that, every time he just continues to give these guys some leeway and try to be the bigger guy, it just causes them to level up and take their, bullying to new heights. And they just keep, increasing the people that they bully until finally Mark Stone remembers the conversation that him and his dad had and realizes
his job is to stand between
him and the bully.
Dean, wait a minute. Chris,
yep.
Listen.
Yeah.
You give that name, Mark Stone. Isn't that a cool name? Mark Stone.
Yeah.
I love it.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a mutual friend that's the main bully there. Remember Dan Severn, the Beast? He's in the movie.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Dan's in the movie. I'll call Michael. Michael's in the movie too. Michael Di Pasquale, Alan Kelly.
Oh, yeah, Michael and I go back.
I know. We talked about Michael Sr. the other night, and I really enjoyed that because Michael Sr. and Michael Jr. is really good friends of ours, all three of ours, because Michael is up there Dean too. But Michael, is really cool because, he got his father right before he passed. We roasted him in the early 90s, but I was one of his last 19 black belts promoted under Michael Di Pasquale Sr. And tell me a story about Michael that you want to tell me. The best story about Michael Di Pasquale Sr.
Michael always would promote, and he's a great promoter. And what he would do is get together the best people, the biggest names at seminars, these training seminars. He would invite me in. He'd say, listen, I want you to do a jiu-jitsu segment. You're going to be one of the instructors. And I was humbled by that alone. But then he put me in the company of people like Wally J and his father, Michael B.
Right.
Sr.
Amazing
practitioners, Benny DeJet. You'd get in there and you'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I want to interrupt
all
you.
These legends.
You and I almost became teammates. I became a Sherman Ray instead, but talk a little about the team that you and Michael put together.
Well, we put that, our team was Team Karate International, and the team was, it, we just had a great the feeling in the team was amazing. The team was great. Peter Fabrizio, Ron Searles, Donald Lee, Matty Gottlieb. Yeah, it was just we had a lot of really, really, really great talent. The Aguilar, Celeste and Jesse Aguilar. There was some back then. These people, Rory Bratter was amazing.
Rory was tiny, but he was really good. Yeah,
he was nine when I got him on the team. Okay. But we're still close. You know, Rory just got married.
Really?
Yes, he did. He just got married, and we're still very close.
You said his name his last name. You said Peter Fabrizio. He was a great kid. He performed in my shows. Now, he was killed or he died through a disease.
He passed away, and it's horrific. But what he was doing something really, really good and really special. Something was happening, and it was he went to pick up a car to surprise his family member with a new car, and he went to pick up the vehicle, and on the way back up through New York and Connecticut, there was a major snowstorm, blizzard. Somebody crashed or was on the side of the road, and he pulled over to help a stranger, and then was struck and struck down. But he left a lasting impression on everyone on the team. He was an amazing young man, very talented, taken away from us too soon.
But he was a great kid. You're loving about Peter. In 1994, at San Antonio at the Supergrounds, boys asked me to put on the halftime show. So I asked Peter and a couple other traditional guys to be the core of the center of my performance. And then circled them around with all the Ron Searles and the, all these
that
guys.
That was San Antonio, wasn't that? Is that San Antonio? That was 95.
And they would do all the, they would do all the open stuff, and the center would be the traditional guys like Peter. And it was a big hit. I put like 60 kids on stage that night. That was crazy.
I remember that. Yeah. That was a fun
you
year.
Remember that? Okay, cool.
I took a gold that year, my friend. I won the weapons.
We took a lot of
pictures.
Let's play the name game with you now. You ready to play the name game?
Sure, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. I want to shoot the name at you. You got 2 minutes to talk about them and tell me your opinion, okay?
Okay.
Ready? Here we go. Fred Hamilton from New York.
Fred Hamilton was very tough. He was very strict, very tough. He used to run a solid tournament. I remember competing in some of the Bronx tournaments, and the Bronx tournaments were rough. And he would come up to me. He goes, "You better come to my tournament." the way he'd say it is like, is it really a choice or what? But he said, then he came to me, he says, "I really want you to come to my tournament. I want you to fly those commas for me at my tournament." And
another name, Ron Van Cleef, the Black Dragon.
Ron Van Cleef and I go back, he had Timac, who did The Last Dragon, who was also, he's in the film business, and he was training with some people in the stunt business that I knew. But Ron Van Cleef and I competed a few times against each other at the Garden because there were certain events that were promoted by another person who promoted a lot. It was a big promoter, actually, in New York.
Aaron Banks. Tell me about your role.
Aaron Banks. Oriental World of Self-Defense. And so a lot of the footage, a lot of stuff. Did you ever see that movie, The Warrior Within? Remember that movie?
Yes, I did. Many times.
It's like one of the first documentaries.
The story about Kyokushin. How about the Black Fighting Kings? It started William Oliver and those guys. Kings. The story about Kyokushin and the first Masao Yama tournament in Japan. And, okay, I'll hit some more New York people. How about Errol Bennett?
Oh, my God. Errol Bennett is one of the most intimidating fighters that there ever was. In New York, He always smiled at you with his eyelashes. He never really smiled at you. When people came into the tournament, they see that Errol Bennett was in that division. You could see that people were intimidated by his presence. He just had that demeanor and the way he carried himself.
I'm gonna try to fake you out.
He would drill you with that reverse punch.
I know, but listen to me. I'm gonna try to fake you out because I'm gonna try to see if you don't know somebody. Remember Robert Nienau?
Robert.
He won everything. He won everything: weapons, kata, and fighting. Robert Nienau.
No, I don't remember him. I don't know him. I can't place him.
How about Terry Mizaki? Terry
Mizaki. Yes.
Yes. Right, cool.
Mizaki, but I know of him not, but I don't have any stories to tell you.
Okay. How about Tadashi Nakamura, my sensei, and Yu Yomi, and William Oliver.
William Oliver. Now that's somebody that was amazing. He did a lot of fighting.
Was.
He was with, you know, he was with Kang.
Well, he was one of the first Kyokushin guys to break out and do open tournaments. Because, you know, back in the day, in Kyokushin, we didn't fight open tournaments. And he
was
one of the first guys to
knock down. He was a great knockdown fighter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How about
absolutely.
There's a few other people. You know, we talked about Aaron Banks. He was an amazing promoter. That man was amazing.
Right, Goju. I remember Goju.
Yeah.
That was Andy. How about Peter Urban? You ever meet Peter? Never meet Mr. Urban?
Yeah, absolutely. He was world renowned and very eccentric. When I met him, he was very eccentric at the time. And from what my understanding was, that was just his nature. But, people looked up to him. I didn't train with him personally, but people looked up to him like he walked on water. And,
Fredo Rodon?
Yeah, he was one of the students in Nisei Goju. He's one of the senior students. You know,
yeah.
Wilfredo,
yeah.
Ray Fitzpatrick, Wilfredo Roldan. You know, they were the key students in Nisei Goju Ru.
Frank Ruiz. How about Frank Ruiz?
Oh yeah,
Johnny Cole.
Frank Ruiz.
Yeah,
he goes back. He goes back a lot of
people. I'm trying to pick you out, man. Don't you understand that right now? Dean, are you still on the line, buddy? Dean.
All right, what about...
Yes, I'm here. I'm here person, but I've got to get ready to go because I got a meeting with one of the backers. I got to call them
in. See you next week with Kim Connor, buddy. Don't worry about it.
All righty, yes, sir. Good show.
Okay.
Glad to meet you, sir. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Okay,
Dean,
buddy. Thank
good
you.
Luck with, good
buddy,
luck
that's Dean Powell, better known as the Wolverine, my co-host, but he's working on a movie right now. He'll be back next week. Okay, I'm trying to pick you out, Chris. So far you've known everybody I said. I'm going to hit you with one guy I know you don't know. You probably don't remember. Okay, Johnny Cole.
Johnny Cole. No, I don't. No, I don't
William
think I
Lee.
Competed against
him. William Lee.
William Lee.
What do you think I know all these New York people? William Lee. He did Kung Fu. How about Paul Vizio?
No. Oh, yeah, Paul Vizio.
Paul Vizio.
Paul Vizio was a great full contact fighter, too. He was a
guy. One Sunday, he calls me up. He says, look, we're going to meet on these rooftops. And these Kung Fu guys, about 100 of them, showed up on these rooftops. And they would do full contact fighting. That's his story. Paul Vizio was he was a pretty good fighter. And he did full contact, too. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, it was back in the PKA days. That was back in the PKA days when people were
on the rooftops in New York. You hear about the fight on the rooftops in New York?
No.
Well, you probably weren't born yet. I'm just kidding. I mean, it was the early 70s. It was 74, 76, 75, and 77 when I did that. Yeah.
That was crazy times.
You want to talk about some people that influenced you in New York? You want to name a couple?
Sure. There was a lot. I mean, Little John Davis probably had the biggest influence in me as far as the self-defense aspect. Kevin Thompson was huge, huge. Jonas Nunes, another name in New York. Great fighter, great martial artist. We used to train together a lot. Jerry Fontanez, working with him
cool.
a lot, you know, back in the day when he did his first. I thought
he was from New York, right? He was from New York.
From the Bronx.
Right?
He's from the Bronx, right. Yeah. Bronx, New York.
Yeah.
You know,
I wanna ask you a hard question.
Amazing.
Chris, I wanna ask you a hard question, okay? Okay. Okay, just answer the best you can. What do you feel about all these Black Belt Hall of Fames now and all these tentative black belts that are running around America? How do you feel about that?
Let's just say belts hold your pants up.
Okay, good answer.
Because
now, how do you feel about
I think
all these Hall of Fames where people can buy their way into fame. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, that's this quick fix mentality is destroying people. You know, you can't get everything instantly. You can't buy everything. There's things that you have to sweat for, you got to work for, you got to believe in your heart and in your soul. You can't just, things don't just come to you that easy. It doesn't have value if you don't put in the time and earn something. You know, that's the beauty
of
martial
arts.
Are you going to play
some Hall of Fame? There are a lot of people that want to buy, that want you to say you got to pay for an award. Are there approached by people like that?
Quite a few.
Wow.
Quite a few.
How do you handle that? I mean, because, come on, Chris, I don't pay for a Hall of Fame. I don't pay for an award. I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, probably more diplomacy than I would, but how would you handle that to somebody? Listen to me. I'll make you a scenario. Chris Colombo, you're famous. I love you. I love what you do, but I'm going to put you into a Hall of Fame, my Hall of Fame, but it's going to cost you $1,000. What would you say to me?
I would say, I'm quite honored that you feel that I should be part of your Hall of Fame. That tell them, you know, be polite first off, and then second, say, well, I'll give it some thought, but I'm not really too into doing those kind of, you know, Hall of Fame.
Okay,
so that's
just not my thing. Listen, these guys today are used car salesmen, so that's what I'm going to say to you, Chris. Okay, Mr. Colombo, all the sponsors will pay $500, but you still got to pay $500 for the award. So
you know, after a while, if you don't understand that what I'm telling you is no, then at that point it's like, dude, I don't need to pay for a Hall of Fame award.
Listen, you buy the award, I even throw in a temporary bottle certificate for you too, buddy. That's what's going on in America. People are buying their way into fame. You know.
It's pretty humorous, right? I would never even consider that. To me,
I got another hard question for you, buddy. What do you think about the internet that's creating all these keyboard warriors? How do you handle that? I mean, do people contact you on Facebook a lot and the media?
I don't entertain people. Why would I waste my time and energy and my thoughts? I'm not going to let them into my head, you know. I'm not going to allow some people to live rent free in my mind. I control within my mind, not them. So if somebody wants to come talking nonsense, then they can talk to themselves. They're talking to me. They're not going to get
that. You said those exact words to me back in the late '70s. A man named Muhammad Ali. Exact same words. No one's going to control my mind. I'm going to be a champion and be who I am. Muhammad Ali said that to me. I'll tell you where it was, in Washington, D.C., and I was at a benefit. And in the front row were all these kids, you know, wheelchairs and crutches. And that night, they gave him a ring, a beautiful ring. And I'll never forget this, Chris. He looked at this little kid that was in a wheelchair. He walked up to him and gave the ring to that little kid and said, "This is a real champion." And he said those same words to me that you just said. No one can control my championship attitude. So that's good words coming from a great champion, coming from a karate champion, Chris Colombo. God bless you, buddy. That's cool.
Thank you, guys.
Now, have you belonged to any Hall of Fames? Have you been inducted into anyone yet?
I've been Mr. Goldberg asked me a couple of times. They sent me stuff.
Yeah.
I never partook, and I never went down there for that. You know what it is? The whole Hall of Fame thing, something bothers me about it when I feel that it's just a lot of people going to an event.
You know what?
Just
you know what, sir? I don't mean to run it back. I got to tell you. Okay, football has one Hall of Fame. Basketball, one Hall of Fame. Baseball, one Hall of Fame. Heck, ping pong only has one Hall of Fame. Martial arts has hundreds, maybe 1,000 Hall of Fames. Come on, man.
So how do you?
I got a Hall of Fame too.
You know, how do you determine what's of value? I think, and because the martial arts is so prevalent, and because there are so many Hall of Fames, that you have to really look where it's coming from, and the people that are involved in it. And if it feels like it's just a money thing, a money grabbing thing, I steer away from it. If it seems to me like it's a sincere thing, then it can be of value.
Right.
And it kind of, you know, I've turned down Hall of Fames. I've many times where I just said no, I'm not interested. I don't, or I'm busy. I don't have time. It's just because
right.
I don't want to insult anybody. You know, I don't want to insult anybody. That's not what I'm here for.
Right.
Let me
share this with you. I got on the phone after I talked to you. And I talked to a lot of people, Michael DeVasquale, a lot of people from California, around the country. And this year, you know, we decided to make you an official history general for the Sport Karate Museum. Now, you can come down to Houston if you want to, or Greenville. That's cool. But, you know, if you accept it, these guys would like to make you a history general along with them. I only have like 250 guys, but, you know, we'd be honored if you accept it. And it didn't cost anything. You know, it's just, you know, I got to say, I accept it. And what is a history general? Someone that's a mentor for the things that the museum does. So if there's a question in New York, then we can call you and you give us the answer or find out what the answer is. That's what a history general is. Someone that knows the history and protects it. And that's what you do. You know, I protect the history one warrior at a time. And guess what, Chris Colombo? You're that one warrior, buddy.
Well, you know, it's quite an honor, and that's something that, to me, based on what I know of what you've been doing with the museum and with the History Generals, I admire it. I think it's something that's – otherwise the history dies, and people don't
right.
know what
you're right.
we did.
You're right.
You know what war stories are, right? War stories
yes,
are the stories that the old martial artists talk about in the day. You know, I used to walk 50 miles to the dojo barefoot in the snow so I could train
yeah.
so hard, and I would do knuckle push-ups on cinder blocks with
concrete.
Broken glass on top. And, you know, you hear those stories. Well, we know that
some
of those
stories.
Oh, I got
one more name. Do you remember Richard Brown? He's one
yeah.
from New Jersey and New York. Richard Brown. Yeah.
No, Richard.
He was a breaker.
You're thinking Dennis Brown.
No, I know Dennis Brown from Washington State. I'm talking about. See, I beat you. I beat you. You knew a name you didn't know. Richard Brown was from. I got you. How about Richard Barnacki? He was a breaker. Long hair,
that
had
I
a beard, had mustache. Okay, you know
him.
Mustache.
I knew
cool.
him. He had the dojo in Long Island. I went to his funeral,
yeah.
by the way.
Oh, I'm talking about Andrew Linnick.
Rich Barathy is who you're talking about.
Yeah, Rich Barathy. How about Andrew Linnick? Remember him?
No, you got me again, dude.
Oh, I tell you what, he's going to be mad because I bet he's listening. And if I said
yeah.
his name, he's going to call me and say, well, you didn't say it right. Well, I said it right. Andrew Linnick from Long Island, New York. So he said he opened up all the shows back in the day. He was before the
oh,
championships.
So you know what was one of the funniest
really?
Talking about shows. Do you know that? This is a little trivia. I had the pleasure of performing. Let's see if you – now, this is, has to do with somebody you know and care about. Benny the Jet.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Benny
my
the
friend,
Jet.
My friend.
Benny the Jet had his last fight in Las Vegas. He fought a Japanese kickboxer, and he won his last fight. He invited people to perform. Before, you know, they had all the exhibit bouts prior, and then his main event, they had, they flew me out there, and I performed on stage before he fought his final fight. Along with me was another kung fu stylist. That kung fu stylist was from the East Coast, New England area. Who was that?
Is that Terry L. Castell?
No, that would be, that would, wouldn't be New England. So,
okay, New York. Okay,
Richard Brandon. Richard Brandon.
Oh yeah,
remember
Richard
him?
Brandon from JPM, the John Palmisa team. And Chris Manny Rodriguez and Don Rodriguez and Christopher Cole. All those guys, Pedro and Xavier. Yeah, Richard Brandon. He was a great performer. He was actually a Power Ranger. Remember?
He used to. He took it so serious. If he beat me, he was great. He was humble. If I beat him, he was pissed at me, boy. And we always had that little rivalry. But you know, it's funny how that that works. You know, you have that rivalry on those days, but yet you still have good feelings about these people because the experiences that you went through and what you did, and you know the victory, the defeat.
To my listeners, Richard was one of the first karate, kung fu legends we lost. And God bless him and his family. But Richard was a Power Ranger, and he was a great competitor. And he was part of the John Paul Mitchell team back in the day. And,
Richard Brandon,
you know,
I remember.
Yeah, you can't get me, buddy. I mean, you can, but I know a lot of people. I've been lucky. Yeah, you know, I'm that little Hawaii guy that, you know, like I said, I got more third places than anybody in the universe, buddy. You know?
Hey, tell me what Butch Tagasawa is doing, because Butch and I used to butt
Butch
heads all the time
in competition. This year, and he'll be in Houston. If you get to come down and get to be a history general this year, Butch and I will give it to you personally. But Butch supports me. He's going to perform at Cotton Wars this year and blow everybody away. But he did the hula dance for me and the Samoan dance for me in Las Vegas to play all the old legends. But he's doing really good. You know, my little Samoan friend. He's not a little anymore. He's kind of,
That's good. He was a good competitor. Him and Michelle Mouse Krasnew.
Good. In fact, all the Sherman Up guys, Alvin Prouder, Leo Creer, Ray Wizard, Cynthia, Michelle, all of them were in Vegas, and I got to honor them. So you mentioned some really good people that I'm very close to. Yeah.
How about Bob Liker?
Bob Liker is in Kansas City, and you know, him, well, he works with Mark Russo. Remember Mark Russo?
Yeah,
Mark Russo and him put on the All-American Tournament. And
AmeriKick.
You know, they broke away from NBL. They do their own thing. They do Waco. And, you know, Bob, I talked to Bob last night. We were making fun of each other about the Super Bowl, you know, and I like Jill a lot. I like Jared. Remember Jared, his son?
Yes.
His son turned out to be a great kata competitor. He turned out to be a lawyer of all things. He's one of the big shot lawyers now. And Bob has been really good. You know, he's promoting. He used to be the coach, athletic coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah, you know, he did karate for them back in the day.
Really?
Yeah.
Was Bob a sheriff at one time?
Well, I think he was a police officer, yes, sir. But his original.
Yeah, I thought he was in law enforcement. Yeah, he was a really nice guy. I remembered I was on his team for 1 year. And actually, that was when I think I was at the AKA Grand Nationals. That's when I think I was fighting for his team at that point in that, yeah. in that event. And then that was a good year.
Yeah, he was one of my rivals back in the NBL days. And what's sad about the NBL is deteriorated. I mean, I understand this year NBL Super Grand, there were less than 50, 70 people in competition for the whole event. I remember back in the day when we competed, NBL tournament, something that would be 1,000 people, you know?
Oh, yeah, there'd be, you know, in your one division, you'd have 30, 40 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, literally. And, there, you know, there wasn't a lot of tournaments that did that. And I thought that the way they did the seeding throughout the year to seed for the Super Grands was a unique approach, because you basically had to earn it every time you went. You didn't always go last.
Let me cut this short, but I'm running out of time, and I want to tell you that how much of a pleasure it was to have you on the show tonight. And can you come back later on in the year, maybe, or next year for sure?
Sure thing. Well, okay. Let's stay in touch and let's set it up, and definitely we'll do something.
Well, your name
you
will
know,
be on the History Journal Award.
I look forward to seeing you.
Well, you understand that your name will be on the History Journal Award in Houston this year. And if you decide to come, you'll let me know, okay?
Well, I'm going to try to do that. I have the everything written down for.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do.
Greenville, South
come,
Carolina.
Well, listen, in Greenville, I tell you, if you come to Houston, I'll pay your entry for Super Pro Kata, the Pro Kata Wars, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a History Journal Award and a Fighting Award. So I'll take care of you if you decide to come, okay?
Thank you very much.
I'm not trying to bribe you or anything, but I love talking to you, Chris, because we talk about all the old guys and the friends. And thank you again for giving me your time. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate being part of the show today.
Cool. If you see all any of those old guys, you know, tell them I still bite bananas and break toilet paper, okay? You know, I'm old, but I still can do it, okay?
That's good.
All right, God
never stop
you,
kicking there, my friend. God bless you. Take care. Now.
God bless you.
Professor,
take care.
Be
God
good.
Bless you. Right. Aloha. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was the great Chris Colombo for our show tonight. Next week will be Kim Kahana, the great stunt coordinator who has a stunt school in Florida, and we'll talk about that next week. On behalf of the AMAA Pioneers and Masters Radio blog, Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Crime Museum and Dean Piles, we're going to say to you, as you always say, aloha, mahalo. Good night.